An Alien Shore. Odysseus awoke and looked groggily around through the mists of sleep. Where had the Phaeacians left him? No, those were not the mists of sleep. A real fog had descended. Through it he recognized no familiar features in the outlines of trees and rocks. He let out a loud roar of pain, anger, and frustration. He had done it again, fallen asleep within sight of home. On the first occasion his men had opened the bag of winds that Aeolus had given him, but by what horrible stroke of misfortune was he now cast away on an unknown island again? The Phaeacians were supposed to be good sailors, the Phoenicians of the West. Somehow they had miscalculated, or a malevolent god had sent a contrary wind, or even changed the pattern of the stars in the sky to confound navigation. Poseidon really did know how to nurse a grievance. He was furious at the Phaeacians for their kindness towards Odysseus, whom he still could not forgive for the blinding of Polyphemus. He begged Zeus to be allowed to punish them for their assistance. Zeus reluctantly agreed. When the ship that had borne Odysseus to Ithaca made its way back to Scheria, the vengeful sea god turned it to stone, whereupon it sank and permanently blocked the harbour. A glint of something metallic caught Odysseus's eye. In a semicircle, half sheltered by a rising bank of dunes, the Phaeacians had set out the golden pots, tripods, cloaks, and other precious things that Alcinous and his nobles had presented to him before he left Scheria. Whatever error they had made in setting him down on this alien shore, they had not at least done so in order to rob him of his treasure. For lack of anything better to do, he began counting the objects in his hoard. The voice of a young man interrupted him. "Good day, stranger." Odysseus spun around. "And good day to you, friend. You're a welcome sight." The young man appeared to be a shepherd, and a richly dressed and well-born one, too. He had a smooth complexion, unlined with worry, and gave no signs of having toiled or laboured hard in his life. Instead of a shepherd's staff, he was carrying a spear. "This is going to sound strange," said Odysseus, "but maybe you can tell me where I am. Are we on an island?"
"You must be from a far country indeed, not to know this place, stranger. It may not be the largest or the most beautiful island in the sea, but it is well enough known around the world. This is Ithaca."
It was Ithaca. He was home. Odysseus was overcome with exultation and relief. But even in this moment of supreme joy, this moment he had dreamed of for so many years, he had the guile and the self-control to hold back. "Ah, yes, Ithaca, Ithaca," he said, as if straining his memory. "I have indeed heard of it. Ruled over by King Oedipus, isn't it? No, not Oedipus. Odysseus. Odysseus, that's it. King Odysseus. Yes, we've heard of Ithaca, even in Crete, which is where I come from. I had to leave there suddenly a few days ago. I won't bore you with the details. I managed to get my treasure aboard the ship before fleeing. My men must have just dumped me on the shore here when I was asleep. So, Ithaca, eh? Ithaca. Well, well." Odysseus realized he had misread this stranger. It was not a young man at all. It was a woman. The mist must have deceived him. She was laughing. "You just can't be straight, can you, you crooked old devil? Never tell the truth if you can think of a good lie first.
twisted as ram's horn. Oh, Odysseus, you rogue, you trickster, you huckster, you charlatan, you cheat, you devious, two-faced fraud. You sly, scheming swindler. So clever, but not clever enough to recognize your guardian and inspiration? Not clever enough to know the goddess who whispers half those schemes to you in the first place? Athena? So caught up in the complex churn of his emotions was he that Odysseus failed to bow down and address the goddess in tones befitting an Olympian deity. Be fair! How can anybody be expected to know you? He complained. You never appear in the same form twice. I know you have been my protectress in times past. On the field of battle at Troy, I felt you often by my side. But for the past 10 years? Marooned on one island after another? Tossed by one storm after another? You'll forgive me if I find it hard to think of you as a guardian and saviour. That's my Odysseus. Always bites the coin before he takes it. Doubts and tests everything. You know I am who I say I am. Look around. You know this is your island. The fog was clearing, and Odysseus began to recognize some of the landmarks of his youth. Just beyond the dunes was the Bay of Phorcus, where he used to catch shrimps, and there, shouldering its way through the last shreds of mist, he made out the noble outlines of Mount Neriton. As a boy, he had climbed its wooded slopes looking for honey 100 times. Now he did fall to his knees. It was the sand and soil of Ithaca he praised, however, not the goddess, much to her amusement. You may not have known it, subtle son of Laertes, but I have been watching over you all this time. But you angered my uncle Poseidon, and we gods do not stand in the way of each other. Now, come on, stand up. There is so much to do. First, let's get your gold into that cave. While Odysseus carried his treasure into the deep interior of the cave, Athena outlined the severity of what awaited him. Your palace is overrun with suitors, all of them brawling and baying for Penelope's hand in marriage. For the sake of her beauty, of course, but in reality more for the sake of your kingdom. They want this island and the others in your realm. You are long dead as far as they are concerned, and it is her duty to marry one of their number. She has separately promised dozens of individuals that she eyes them with particular favour, but she can't keep playing that game. She matches you for cunning, you know. Athena then told Odysseus about Penelope's ploy with her loom, promising to marry only when she had finished weaving a shroud for Laertes. And she unpicked her work every night. Oh, clever Penelope! Odysseus was delighted. But he soon fell to gloom. I had thought I would go straight to her, but from what you say, I'd be cut down before I got to her chamber. Indeed, you would. Whatever happens, you cannot afford to be recognized. Let's see what we can do with you. Athena touched him with her spear. In a sudden puff of dust, the fine cloak and tunic that the Phaeacians had given Odysseus were reduced to dirty, tattered rags. His smooth, bronzed skin creased itself into sagging wrinkles. The fierce light of intelligence and determination that always gleamed from his eyes was dimmed to a milky dullness. His elegant staff of fine beech, banded in bronze, was now rough, well-used blackthorn. As filthy and unprepossessing a beggar as ever walked, said Athena with approval. Now, If you're going to plot an attack on these suitors, you will need allies. First and best, you'll remember Eumaeus. It is too easy for us to assume that a swineherd carried the same status in Odysseus's day as it did in medieval times, and perhaps our own. But if you remember, Athena first appeared to Odysseus in this scene as a well-born shepherd. Immortal nymphs tended the cattle and sheep of Helios. There was nothing base or undignified in herding for a living. In an age when there was no money, cattle, sheep, goats, and pigs were the highest currency. The status, therefore, was more that of a banker than a menial, and Eumaeus, as we will see, was of royal blood. The pigman? Your father's swineherd, yes. A more loyal and true friend to you and Penelope does not live on the island. Go to him. And my son? What of Telemachus? I helped him sail to the mainland. He wanted news of you. First he went to Pylos to see Nestor, but he's now staying in Sparta as a guest of Menelaus and Helen. I shall fetch him back straight away. Odysseus shook his head, still in a kind of dazed disbelief. My God, I'm home. Yes, you are home. And yes, I am your God.